Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of the PO Show. That's Polar Opposites. And we're coming to you right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Big T, and as always, I am joined by my main man, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend, talking about none other than Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you, sir?
James, I'm doing fantastic. I'm looking forward to another great show, and yeah, it's supposed to be one of the slow times of the year, but I just don't think an hour there's going to be enough time for us to get everything that I know we want to talk about tonight. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I know you have some plans for us entertaining tonight.
We definitely got a lot to get into. That goes without saying. And, you know, the basketball playoffs are deep into the second round. So, you know, we've got to bring in the original friend of the program, Mr. Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame himself. I'm talking about Ron Rutland Jr. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, Phil, you said it right. We've got so much to get into, including the NBA playoffs. I don't want to waste any time. I want to get right to it. We'll start this show just like we start every single show. As adults, you make plenty of decisions, and we're just glad that you decided to spend just a little bit of time with us right here on the PO Show. If you spend any amount of time listening to this show, you know without a shadow of a doubt that we have zero love for baseball on the PO Show. But to kind of pay homage to supposedly America's favorite pastime, hey, let's start the show off, Phil, with a segment that we like to call Fair or Foul. So, gentlemen, I'm going to read to you some headlines from the past week, and you let me know, in your opinion, if it's fair or foul. All right, let's go right off the top. OSU QB and national champ Cardale Jones tells Chicago Bulls star Joakim Noah, and I quote, "Watch your mouth before I give you these hands." Fair or foul? Phil, we'll start with you.
Well, Terrence, you know, don't forget the whole quote. I mean, he ended it with chump. You know, he said, "I'll put these hands on you, chump." I mean, so that's kind of adding a little bit extra on top. I think it's fair. From what I heard, what Joakim Noah said about, you know, saying that they're not in the SEC, first of all, I don't know if that makes sense because they beat the team that came out of the SEC in the playoffs, and that's Alabama. And so if you beat the best team in the SEC on your way to the national championship game, then, you know, I have to say that that is a little bit of an irrelevant argument. Now, granted, I think he probably, you know, he went 0-60 in about 3 seconds when, you know, he probably could have shifted a couple gears.
Okay.
You know, go to first, second, third gear. I mean, he went straight for the throw. So that's the only thing that you could be considered foul. But, I mean, I would say in this case, it hit the foul pole, which in baseball, that means that it's fair. So I'm going fair with this. I think it's probably a little bit in fun, more than what we realize, but who knows, you know, the Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather fight didn't give us anything, so maybe this is the matchup that we've been looking for. Let's get these two guys in the ring and let's have at it.
Yeah, let's get Bob Arum on the case. Rod, what's your take, fair or foul?
Yeah, I'm kind of piggyback off Cool Hand. My take is that it was fair. You know, one thing about, you know, being on social media and everything, kind of like fair, you know, you don't know, you know, how in jest or how serious he was talking about, you know, when he's talking about, you know, getting these hands. But I'm going to take it as, you know, he wasn't that serious with it. But yeah, you know, I mean, if you're, you know, if you're out there at a, you know, event and you're on the microphone and you're being heckled by, you know, you're a college kid being heckled by an NBA player,
mm-hmm,
talking about, hey, you know, you're not in the SEC, you know, yeah, I think you got the right to come back at him a little bit on Twitter. I think it's more than fair for him to do that.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go the opposite way with you guys on this. I'm going to go foul, but not in Cardale's way, but for Joakim Noah. You said it right there, Ron. This dude is supposed to be a professional, and he talks about how bad he wants to beat LeBron. Well, Joakim, hey, take a cue from LeBron. Take a page out of LeBron's playbook. because we all know when it gets to playoffs, LeBron shuts social media down completely. And Joakim Noah is getting into this sparring match, a trash talking match, not with somebody on the court, but somebody in an opposite sport and not even in the highest level of the sport. So I'm going to go foul there with Joakim Noah. Next up, prior to winning this weekend's Players' Championship at Sawgrass, Ricky Fowler was named by his peers through an informal straw poll as the PGA's most overrated player. Phil, what say you, fair or foul?
Now, on this vote, was this by the players, the actual players voted this?
This was by the actual players on tour.
That's foul. You know, I mean, like you guys are talking about Joakim Noah, these guys are professional golfers. And usually we hold golfers to a higher standard than maybe we hold other sports because it's supposed to be the gentleman's game. And, you know, these guys are colleagues, they're peers. So I don't even know why you would hold a vote for something like this. And number one, I mean, I don't even know who would put something like this together. But, I mean, if somebody approached me and said, hey, we're going to vote on our peers who's the most overrated, there's no way that I would participate in that. Number two, I don't know if you can really call, I don't even know if overrated is a thing. I mean, if you got to that point to where you're regarded with endorsements, you're regarded on the course, you have substantial winnings every year, then you probably have earned what you have reached. So I don't even know if that's an actual thing, being overrated. If people have that opinion of you, then it's probably that you earned it, whether that's a good opinion or bad opinion. So I'm going to say that's extremely foul that the other players would even participate in a vote like this. But good for Ricky that he won a tournament this weekend. Even better for Ricky, I don't know if you saw his dime piece that Ricky's in on the green, but
oh yes,
there too. So I don't think he's really worried about anything, but me personally, I'm going foul.
Ron, what do you got, fair or foul?
Yeah, I gotta roll with two hands on this one. Now, I'm not a big, knowledgeable golf person. Didn't know much about Fowler before this weekend. But I'm gonna go along the lines of, if you guys are taking a vote as professionals, going against your peers in this manner, that to me is just foul. in the FOUL, FOW, however you want, foul all the way around. So, why do you, even have, who even participated, in that type of vote? They should be ashamed of themselves as well. And was that vote before or after he won the tournament?
Yeah, the vote was taken before the tournament even started, and it was
before the tournament.
Yeah, and it was a reporter wow. That was following the tour, just randomly talking to golfers, and they probably felt like it was off the record, probably, and I don't know for sure, but just randomly ask a collection of golfers, hey, who in your opinion, who's the most overrated on it? But once again, I'm gonna go opposite. I'm going to go opposite of you guys.
Face the test. Before you go opposite, you can't even do that because it's already been decided. Ricky Fowler. It's foul, man. You can't argue that. It's not Ricky Fowler. It's Ricky Fowler. It's foul, man.
Well, look, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say it's fair. All's fair in love and golf. I say it's fair for the simple fact that kind of where you were going, Phil, but you fell a little short. If, in fact, they're saying that you're overrated, it's only because you must be doing something right. They mad because you got the Puma endorsement. They mad because you got the dime piece coming out on the green. They mad that you're getting all this publicity. And quite honestly, to their credit, not because he's winning every weekend, not because he's in contention every weekend, but because you're so lame and boring in your picket fence and 2.5 kids and a dog, that nobody cares about what you're doing on tour. But here's a guy that's very flamboyant in his dress and his style. I almost wish he hadn't cut his hair. I wish he had kept the long locks because I thought it brought a lot of youth to the sport and breathed a breath of fresh air where it was definitely needed, especially in the absence of Tiger Woods. So I say it's fair because if they're saying he's overrated, it's because he's obviously doing something right. Next up, fair or foul. After leading his team to the playoffs for the first time since 2011, the New Orleans Pelicans fire head coach Monty Williams. That's basketball. So, Ron, I'm going to start with you. Fair or foul?
When I heard that today come across the wire, or seen it come across the wire, I was kind of disappointed. This is basketball. I'm going to say, as much as I don't like it, as much as I don't agree with it, unfortunately, it's all fair. When you come into, that profession, anything can happen. I guess what's foul about it, though, was that the fact that you told that man, your job is on the line, but if you make the playoffs, it's safe. And that is, the foul part of it. But hey, we see these kind of crazy decisions made all the time. Obviously, I think there's something, more to it. Maybe, they felt like, there's somebody available now that we might want to try to go after that maybe wasn't available or didn't think would be available, But unfortunately, I have to say it's fair.
What about it, Coolhan?
Yeah, this is one that you really have to weigh out and look at both sides of it. So I'm going to say that it hit the foul pole again. I'm going back to the foul pole. Hit the foul pole, so that means that it is fair. You hate it because the guy didn't make the playoffs. So when you look at it as far as the standpoint from this year, they had a lot of injuries throughout the year. So because of that, they finally got it going. They got healthy towards the end of the season, made the playoffs. And I think it was the last game of the season. I think they were one of the teams that made it in right at the end. But by doing that, by beating out Oklahoma City, they drew the number 8 seed, which means they have to go against the number 1 seed. So you have to look at it and say, based off of his coaching ability this year, if they had been healthy, they could have been lucky enough to get like a number 5 seed. You're not facing one of the best teams out of the West, and maybe they can make it to the second round, and if they do that, he can salvage his job. But as you mentioned, he's been at this for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first year that they made the playoffs, and then when you get further down into the stats, I think his winning percentage was like .49, so he was below 500 over these few years, so that's the worst in franchise history. So I think when you look at all those facts and you weigh everything out, it comes out to the fair side, and I think they believe they have enough talent on their team that if they get the right coaching, that they can, make a difference. But this is a trend that we're seeing in the NBA. I mean, like last year with Mark Jackson,
yep,
was fired. They brought in Kerr, and then you have Oklahoma City's coach being let go. So that's kind of the trend where if you don't get it done in, even 2 to 3 years, you're let go. So the guy got 4. So I'm going to say fair, even though it looked like he may have been right there on the brink to turning the corner. We'll just never know.
Yeah. I'm going to go opposite of you guys on this one, too. I say it's foul from just the simple point that he got better every single year, and they did make the playoffs for the first time since 2011, and which is essentially the first time they made the playoffs since Chris Paul. So it seemed like he was in the midst of building something there. I would have liked to have seen him given the opportunity to see it come to fruition, but more importantly, these owners in basketball. And it seems to be, and I don't know why, it seems to be more so in the NBA than any of the other major sports. These owners are so impatient in basketball. And they act like, that it's easy to win an NBA championship. That, what do you mean you haven't won a championship? even though I was not necessarily the biggest fan of the guy out of Oklahoma City, his name escaped me. Scott
Brooks.
Yeah, Scott Brooks. Even though I wasn't a fan, but it's hard to say that he wasn't doing the job. You know, did they win a national title? No. But look what they were going up against. You think that you're forgetting about, all these teams are going up against the best player in the world in his prime. And you're holding that, somehow you're holding that against these coaches, firing them because they didn't get it done. You know, if you're in the West, you're going up against not one or two good teams. You're going up against five or six great teams. And you get fired because you didn't win a championship? I just, you know, it just seems a little short-sighted and I don't know, well, for lack of a better term, just seems foul to me. But, Ron, you said something that I hadn't thought of, that maybe they thought they could get somebody else that was now available. So maybe they admired what Scott Brooks did in the West with a young team and developing young superstars. And maybe they thought Scott Brooks could do something with an Anthony Davis. And then Phil, you brought up Mark Jackson, that unfortunately, I hate to admit it, but I always keep forgetting about Mark Jackson, that he's out there. And he too might be a good fit for New Orleans. So, Ron, you bring up a good point. Maybe it's not so much about what he hadn't done or wasn't able to do as much as it is they have their eyes on maybe even a bigger prize. Hey, a couple more on these. I like where we're going here. Fair or foul? After telling ESPN's Stephen A. Smith that he would, in fact, grant Manny Pacquiao a rematch, the undisputed pound-for-pound best Floyd Mayweather later tells Showtime's Jim Gray in a one-on-one sit-down that he will not fight Pacquiao in a rematch because he is, and I quote, a sore loser and a crybaby. Gentlemen, fair or foul? Go ahead, Phil. I'll start with you.
Okay, on this one, I'm going to go rain delay. I'm done talking Pacquiao, Mayweather. That was the biggest disappointment ever since. I'm going rain delay. You guys can have at it. I'll let you decide on this one, but I'm in a rain delay on this. I'm done with them.
Well, all right. What do you got on that, Ron?
I'm going to say it's fair. From what I understand, anyway, I'm going to say it's fair. From what I understand is the fact that, I guess, when Mayweather told Stephen A. that he was not aware, and I don't know how he wasn't aware, but he was not aware of how the events that went down through Pacquiao's camp with coming out about, you know, the shoulder and the tear and everything that he thought, I guess, occurred during the fight.
Right.
You know, then he was made aware that it happened, you know, before the fight, and they were kind of using that as an excuse and everything like that. So I guess that kind of ticked him off. Enough to say, you know what, you know, no, I'm not going to give you a rematch if that's, you know, how you're going to act, if that's how you're going to come out after this fight. You didn't take it like a man, so I'm not even going to give you another opportunity to make that money. That's all, that, you know, that's all it's about for him anyway.
Exactly, and I agree with you. It's completely foul. I mean, I'm sorry, completely fair for him to be able to say that, for the simple fact that he being Floyd Mayweather, gifted you, Mr. Pacquiao, with the largest check you've ever received. And for you to talk noise and not give him due respect and just be man up and say, hey, he was the better fighter that night, but, you know, we'll see what happens next time. That's all he had to say. So the fact that, you know, you couldn't man up and was going to actually try to get another big check, no. I'm right there with Floyd on that. You gets no more. You know, you just cashed in. I think, in fact, it's the most, I think if you add up Pac's last four or five fights, I forget the number, they don't equal what this one check was, you know. So, yeah, I'm with Floyd on this 120%. It was definitely fair, and Pac needs to get the stepping. All right. And undoubtedly the biggest sports story of the week. We'll end it on this one. The New England Patriots lose two draft picks, get fined $1 million, not $1,000, not $100,000, but $1 million, and star quarterback Tom Brady is suspended for the first four games of the season as part of their roles that they played in Deflategate. Gentlemen, what say you, fair or foul?
You know, hopefully we're going to get into this a little bit deeper later in the show, but, I mean, just to keep it short right now, just to keep rolling with the segment here, I'm going to say foul. You know, I just felt like it was more of a misdemeanor type of offense. And he's getting a suspension that you would get if you got caught using steroids. And, you know, having the football one PSI lower than the recommended amount, which, you know, I have a couple of issues with that that hopefully we can talk about. But I don't think that's the same as taking an illegal drug and an outlaw drug like steroids. So I'm going to go foul. I think the punishment was very severe. But, hey, that's been the MO of Goodell and the league. They have no idea how they want to punish people. I mean, one guy gets off, next guy, you know, they overreact. It's a zoo, and it's a, I don't know, it's almost like a state fair, you know, carnival over there. I mean, there's just no telling what you're going to see. So I'm going foul. Thought it was too severe.
Okay, Ron. Let's be clear. Ron goes on the record as an Indianapolis Colts fan, so I want to preface that firsthand. But go ahead, Ron. What fair or foul?
Well, you know, I'm going to say it's foul.
What?
I was very surprised. Yeah, I was very surprised at the severity of the suspension. Four games, for some, low air footballs. I didn't think it was going to warrant. I thought he was probably going to get fined or something like that. You know, I don't know if this is because this is a repeat offense, you know, dealing with the Patriots all together, how they came to the conclusion, giving him four games. Was it because he wasn't very cooperative? Because he lied? You know what I mean? Yeah, I would like to hear a little bit more, information on how they came up with that. Or is this a, hey, we're going to say four games, he's going to appeal, and maybe it goes down to two. So, I don't know. But I, in my opinion, I thought it was foul.
Well, I don't even know if I can continue the show. I'm in such awe and shock that Ron said that it was foul. I wasn't ready for that one. But let me get in here. First of all, I can't believe I'm the only one that said it's fair. But yes, I think it's completely fair. In fact, if there's anything foul about it, it should have been six games. If there's anything foul about it, it's the fact that there will be an appeals process. And Ron, you're probably right. It'll probably settle at two games, which is nowhere near enough. I'm surprised that you feel, because you're the one that always reminds me that it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. See, have we forgotten that Tom Brady went in front of the national media and laughed out loud? What? Balls? What? Deflated balls? Oh, you guys are funny. Not once, but twice. Are we forgetting that Bill Belichick went in front of the national media acting like he was Bill Nye the Science Guy, talking about barometric pressure and temperature, on and on and on? Are we forgetting that the owner, Robert Kraft, demanded that Roger Goodell apologize publicly to the Patriots organization? They did all of this in the face of this, knowing full well that they were dead ass wrong. They knew they was wrong. And there's very little that you can say to me to make me to believe otherwise. That's first and foremost. Second, to your point, Ron, yes, it has a lot to do with their past transgressions. You know, Phil, you said that, he got the same the same thing if, or worse suspension if someone was taking PEDs. Not actually true. If you were taking a banned substance, not the first time, the second time, but the third. Remember, Josh Gordon, because it was his third failed drug test, got suspended for the whole year. So the past transgressions come into play a little bit as well. So again, if we go back and look at Bountygate, and I'm just looking at other rulings for, let's just put it all under the category of behavior detrimental to the league. If we go back and we look at Bountygate, they had been warned previously, and they kept doing it. Therefore, the punishments were very severe the second time around. And it's been well documented about the Patriots and their obvious institutional cheating. I mean, it's not just this one-off stuff. They've positioned themselves, they've presented themselves to the entire league and to the entire NFL as having an institutional habits of cheating. And again, and it's not so much, and I agree with you, you're dead on that, you know, balls being a few pounds under or over the pressure, you're right, I agree with you. That's nothing to necessarily write home about, but because of the cover-up and because it's just one more instance of this institutionalized cheating, I think the league had to take strong actions and had to take a stand. And like I said, I think it's unfortunate, however, that that won't stand at four games. It'll be reduced after the appeals process to two games. And it gets reduced, and I'll tell you right now, I'll lose my mind if it's reduced to two games. If it gets reduced to less than that, I don't know. I don't know. I might have to drive to Boston myself to get some righteousness going on. But the fact of the matter is, the Patriots nor Tom Brady is above the law, and all we've heard in this Roger Goodell administration has been protect the integrity of the game. That's all we get preached. That's all we get preached to about. That's the only thing we hear coming out of the New York offices is we must protect the shield. We must protect the integrity of the game. And to me, this whole Deflategate and the subsequent cover-up, I cannot stress that enough, and the subsequent cover-up says to me that this was definitely a huge blow, or could have been a huge blow, to the NFL's integrity. But that wraps it up for this particular segment of Is It Fair or Is It Foul? And let's, to your point, though, because it is multi-layers on this thing, I agree with you, Phil. So I do want to peel back the layers a little bit. But like I said, first of all, I'm shocked that the both of you thought that the punishment was harsh. Let's start there. Let's start there. I need you to help me out. When you say that it's too harsh, you're saying that based on what exactly?
Well, you know, if they would have came out and said Tom Brady is being suspended four games because he lied about deflating the footballs, I'd be fine with that. I mean, I call that the Martha Stewart rule, the Dez Bryant rule. You know, they didn't get in trouble because of their actions. They got in trouble because of the cover-up. You know, Martha Stewart went in front of a federal grand jury, whatever it was, under oath, and lied that she had that tip. Dez Bryant, people say, oh, Dez Bryant, you know, didn't get to play his last year because he had dinner with Deion Sanders.
Yeah, that's right, Deion.
Yeah, Deion Sanders. But that's not the case. He didn't get in trouble for that. That's a minor offense. He got in trouble because he lied about it. And so if the NFL would have come out and said, hey, you know, we found these are the facts, he lied about it, so that is why we are suspending him. I'd be fine with that. But they didn't make any mention about him lying on TV. It was that he was generally aware that the error was taken out of the football. Now, if we can rewind and go back, when this story first broke, you remember how critical I was of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Right.
And I made it out to be that, you know, they had this huge advantage by taking air out of the balls. But after I didn't read the whole Wells report, but mostly I read those text message exchanges between the guy with the last name, like Draminski, and then McNally.
Right.
And as I read those, I became more convinced that this was not a big deal. You know, a lot of those texts on several occasions, and I mean different weeks, not the same week, but before different games, Tom Brady, I guess he would go and touch the ball and say, hey, these are overinflated. And I said, well, Tom, you know, the NFL just inspected these. And he's like, dude, I'm telling you, they're overinflated. They would check it, and the pressure would be 16 PSI or higher. And, you know, they would text back and forth. Well, Tom was right. So they admitted that the balls were overinflated. And so to me, all Tom Brady did was go and say, look, guys, these are overinflated. I don't care what the NFL says. I know they're overinflated. Get the ball the way I want it, and let's roll. And so to me, that's what happened. Now, when the story broke, it's right before the Super Bowl. So he can't really come out and say, hey, you know, I did tell them to deflate the footballs, but they were overinflated because, I mean, I'm sure he was afraid he could get suspended on the spot and miss the Super Bowl. So I'm not saying I condone his lying, but I do understand it. But never in those text messages or those conversations do they ever say that Brady specifically said, I want this ball deflated to 11 PSI below the... I don't think it was that specific. I think it was a touch and a feel thing.
Mm-hmm.
He picks the ball up and says, hey, these are overinflated, take some air out, and make it to where it's not, you know, a beach ball. Make it to where it's not a watermelon or whatever. But the last thing I want to say about this whole thing, why I think the rule needs to be changed. You know me, Terrence, I'm not big on rule changes. You know, I'm not the Nick Saban who wants to take out a hurry-up offense.
Right.
I'm not the guy that says DeAndre Jordan shouldn't be allowed to be fouled. I'm not one of those guys. But in this situation, if you have a rule that you can't really quantify, because in that Wills report it said when they tested those footballs from the Colts game, the first time they tested it was like 11.5.
Okay.
The second time they tested it, it was 11.7. The last time they tested it, it was 11.9. How can the ball continue to inflate when you're testing it? When you check your tires, the more you check it, the tires on your car, it deflates. It takes air out of it. So if these machines or whatever they use to test this, if you can't get an accurate reading, then how can the players be expected to follow this rule? So they have to do something, maybe make the range a little bit larger, but every time they test this, the PS5, they get a different reading. So if you can't get a consistent reading, how can you expect the players to abide by it when there's no telling, you know, what the standard is going to be? So to me, they have to do a rule change, and that's why I said it was foul, because you have all these, you know, components going on where the NFL officials are overinflating, and so then the player's trying to go back and sneak and get the ball where he knows it's supposed to be, you know, within the rules of the game. To me, it's just a big mess, and I feel like there wasn't that big of an advantage garnered to where you would say, okay, that's a four-game, $1 million fine, plus you lose two draft picks in back-to-back years. I don't know. To me, it's just excessive, and the more I read about it, the more I think there's just something wrong with the rule, and they need to revisit that and see if they can make it a little bit more clear for not only you and I to understand, but the people that are the players that are participating in the game.
Yeah, you really, I mean, you really are shocking me, Phil. You really are shocking me on this, because I mean, it's almost like you just.
And you know me, man. I mean, I'm a huge Tom Brady hater.
That's what I'm trying to understand.
Any love lost between the Patriots and myself, but the more I read about it, I just don't think there was an ill will set up where Brady's like, hey, I'm about to break this rule. I just don't think that was the intent.
And
I
that's,
think he,
and that's
the balls are overinflated, and he's like, look, let's get it right. Plus, every NFL quarterback, now, of course, not quarterbacks that are still playing today, but Brett Favre, all these guys on ESPN that played, and I mean recently, they said they all do this. Who was it, Jim Kelly? Or I know he hasn't played recently, but I think he said he paid off the ball boy before the Super Bowl to get him to get the balls the way he wanted it. So, I mean, that's another thing. If everyone, and I'm not saying just because everyone does it, that makes it right, but if everyone is doing this, I don't understand why, you know, Brady would be punished so severely if it's agreed upon between quarterbacks in the NFL that they all do this. I just find it strange.
But Phil, but you do understand. But you do understand. You of all people understand. It's the Bobby Petrino rule. Don't have the press conference. If he hadn't have done the press conference,
right.
I mean, it probably would have been fine. Or even if he was going to have a press conference, all he had to say was, you know what, you know, I really sorry about this. You know, I'm very particular about the way I want the balls, and I probably went back and forth with these guys four or five times, and if me, you know, pressuring them to get it right caused them to underinflate the balls, then that's my bad. That's all he had to say, and this story was done. It wouldn't even been a story.
Yeah.
That's all he would have had to have said. But no.
That's the point.
But my point is he didn't. He tried to defraud the league. Oh, I don't know anybody by the name of McNally. Really? But you got text messages, but you don't know him. You know, Tom.
But that's my point here. If they would say he got suspended because he lied, I'm fine with 4 games on that. I mean, you shouldn't lie. But that's not why he's suspended. He's suspended because of deflating the footballs, which I think is ridiculous.
Well, now if we want to go with the actual term, he was suspended 4 games for behavior that was detrimental to the league. That's what the blanket statement is, for behavior detrimental to the league. And that behavior, in my opinion, has little to do with deflating footballs, but has everything to do with the show that he and Belichick and Robert Kraft put on. So, I'll tell you what, let's try it this way. There were other teams that got fined in this offseason for, you know, rule breaking. My Falcons got fined for pumping crowd noise in. Now, imagine if you would, immediately after that story broke, if Arthur Blank held a press conference and just started laughing. Crowd noise? What? We wouldn't do something like that. And then imagine if he brought in a scientist and said that, well, the average male voice can reach this number of decibels, and if you multiply that by the 85,000 people that were there, then you can see that it's easily possible that we would have reached these. I mean, that's what I'm
talking about. That's more black and white. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you have scientists right now that argue both sides of it. One scientist says there's no way the cold air could have done it. There's another one that says he's proven it with his experiment. And that's what I'm saying. But crowd noise, either you pumped it in or you didn't. That's what I'm saying. This rule, that's why I think it needs to be changed, because it's like there's no way to really quantify it. I mean, every time they test it, they get a different reading. Every time you test, hey, did you pump in crowd noise or not? Yes or no? There is no, well, we kind of did. No, it's either you did or you didn't. With this rule, I mean, it's like cold air. You have scientists that are well-regarded say, yes, it could deflate a football. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. There is no clear answer. After all this conjecture and this talk and this fodder, we still have no idea if it's possible. And that's my point. If you can't quantify it, you have to change the rule. You have to do something to prevent this from happening again.
Well,
because it's just too ambiguous. That's
well,
my point.
If that's what
if he lied, if he suspended 4 games for lying, I'm good with that. But let's you know, change the conversation to let's fix this if it's broken.
Well, if that's what you really feel, then go tell it to Barry Bonds. Tell Barry Bonds that if you don't have definitive proof, then you can't prosecute, you can't hold him accountable. If that's how you really feel, then go tell Barry Bonds that. Now, see, now we've had this Barry
okay,
Bonds.
You don't tell Mayweather that. You know, Mayweather wanted Pacquiao to do these, you know, crazy extra drug testing.
What's crazy about Olympic rules? That's Olympic testing. That's not crazy. That's what they do in the Olympics.
That's what I'm saying. He never tested positive, so why do something extra that boxing already had their drug testing policy in place? So why go above and beyond? And from what I was told, boxing used an Olympic-style testing, just like they used in track and field at the Olympics. That's what they did. As soon as the fight is over, you go and take a piss into a cup and that's it. But, you know, Mayweather wants the blood drawn and, you know, all these different things. But if he never had a positive test, then why the suspicion? So, I mean, I don't want to hear about, you know, Barry Bonds and all that. I mean, Lance Armstrong never had a positive test. Okay, so, I mean, that doesn't mean anything to me. We all know that Lance Armstrong knows. We all know, if we're going to be reasonable human beings, we know Barry Bonds was on. I mean, there's just too much smoke. You know, all the trainers that
and,
you deal with.
Okay, and that's what I'm telling you.
That's what I'm saying. You look at Barry Bonds' head, it swelled up, his body completely transformed. You can pretty much quantify that. What I'm saying is, with this rule, you cannot quantify. It's too ambiguous.
Phil,
there's too many factors that can affect it. This will be my solution. When they make the footballs at Spalding or wherever, they test, they get the air pressure perfect in their facility, but there is no way that you can take air out or put air in. That's why, you know, the little needle hole, you take that out and let everyone play with the same football. Because, I mean, there's just, I don't know, it just seems like a crazy rule that you print and you can't quantify it.
Well, Ed.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear you, but you're still talking out of both sides of your mouth. You just said that, and we'll move on because we got to get to this basketball stuff. But I mean, you're saying you just said in one breath that, you know, well, any reasonable human being knows that Barry Bonds on the stuff. Well, guess what? That's what the Rails report said. It's a reasonable belief that Tom Brady knew about the balls being deflated. That's all we're saying. The exact same.
That's what I'm saying. I know that he knew. He told them. Deflate these footballs, but only because they were overinflated. Those guys said it repeatedly. Yeah, the NFL messed up again. They screwed Tom again. It was 16.5 PSI. That's my point. Tom Brady said, hey, y'all need to deflate these. But I don't think he said deflate this to 11.5. I think the guys let a little bit too much out. I don't think he was trying to break the rule. I think he knew the ball was overinflated, and he said, deflated. But to me,
so then we don't need. So we don't need
a. You should be able to take the ball, the air out, the way you want. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I know Tom Brady lied. I know he deflated it. But my point is, you shouldn't have to. If you can't get to a standard that's acceptable, I mean, you got all these PSIs all over the place. You have to be able to get to a standard that's acceptable instead of just guesswork.
All right. I'm gonna say this, and we're gonna move on then. If that's the case, how you just painted it, that he told them to deflate it and because they were overinflated, but he didn't tell them a specific amount. If that's the story that we're gonna roll with, the minute that Tom Brady realized that somebody's job was in jeopardy, he should have stepped forward and cleaned it all up. He did not. He continued with the cover up, and that's why I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the, you know, with what was handed down from with the league, four games. Because if in fact it was just an honest mistake or this is how it played out, then he should have stepped up and said that rather than have these people that are paid far less than he is, whose livelihoods are, you know, they depend, you know, a great deal more on their paycheck than he ever would. They're, you know, instead of having them standing there in the line of fire, he should have stepped up and said, hey, whoa, this has gotten out of hand. This is what happened. Bam, boom, whatever. It didn't happen. I wanted to ask about his legacy and would this tarnish it, but we won't go there because I can see that's a whole nother show. Maybe we'll touch that a little bit next week. But let's get into this NBA playoffs because this was buzzer beater weekend, guys. I mean, we had not one, not two, three buzzer beaters. I mean, shots for the ages. You know, you had started it off with Derrick Rose hit a buzzer beater, and why nobody tried to defend him, I'm not really sure what that was about. Then you had Paul Pierce, and you know he off glass nonetheless. Chris Broussard asked him after the game, "Did you call glass?" And the classic response was, no, I called game. And then, you know, LeBron, not to be outdone, he gave it right back to Derrick Rose and company. And speaking of not being, how do you get open? And actually, I want to start right there with that play. This is what I left off of the fair or foul we should have put in there. I definitely want to get Ron's take on this. So I don't know how LeBron gets open. At any rate, he gets open, he makes the shot. In the post-game interview, they ask him about the play, and LeBron says, well, to be honest with you, the play that Coach Blatt had drew up, I waved it off. We ran my play. That comment in the post-game, LeBron making that comment, that fair or foul, Ron?
Wow, you know, he's a big-time player.
Yep.
You know, where he stands, his position, it's fair.
Mm.
And, I mean, you know, he threw his coach under the bus, but rightfully so.
Uh-oh.
you know, scratched the plate.
Mm-hmm.
He had LeBron initially taking the ball out of bounds.
Oh, goodness.
So this is not a situation where LeBron was going to be on the court and maybe he's doing, you know, having him as a decoy.
Right.
He's got him inbounding the ball. Course, LeBron is going to be like, wait a minute. No way I'm not taking this last shot. Especially he's feeling, you know, hey, he had, what, 2 turnovers in a row, 2 charges?
Right.
You know, going down the stretch. You know, he feels like he's going to try to make up, you know, for what has happened. But the last thing he's definitely going to do is take the ball out of bounds.
Right.
In that situation.
Right.
With that team, with him being the leader.
Sure.
So, you know, for me, it was completely fair.
What you got, Phil?
Man, it's Hacker George, man. It's foul.
Mm.
Number one, you know, with LeBron's kind of history and makeup, he doesn't always want the last shot. You know, so everyone has been so critical of Vlad. I mean, if you look at the couple plays before that, they had issues getting the ball in. So I think that was Vlad's mindset. But, I mean, at the time, LeBron doesn't want the last shot. You know, he talks about, oh, I want to give my teammates the ball. You know, so I don't think it's out of the question to say, you know, we're going to put our best player just to make sure we get a good pass in to run the play. But, you know, this is not the first time that a superstar has vetoed a play.
Right.
But we never hear about it. You never heard Michael Jordan say, hey, man, I scratched that play that Phil Jackson called. We're doing my own thing.
Right.
I think they're, like Jordan and those guys, Magic, Bird, all those guys, you know, they scratch plays.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're asked about it in the post game, you just say, well, you know, we talked about it. We had 2 plays drawn up. We talked about it, and, you know, we ended up deciding on that last play. That's how you handle it. Just like the golfers that voted Fowler most overrated. It's just uncalled for. I mean, there's
right.
no reason to participate in that. There is no reason for LeBron to get up there and throw the coach under the bus when all you have to say as a professional is, hey, we looked at it, we discussed it, and we decided that the best plan of action was to let me take that final shot, and hey, it worked out. So, you know, good job by coach and myself. You know, I mean, that's all you have to say, and it's done. But it seems very strange. I don't know what it is about LeBron, even when I was a fan last year, 2 years ago. To me, he always says strange things. I just want to get your take on this guy. I mean, but to me, the way he says things, to me, it's just strange. It's almost like he thinks he's like the father and he's playing with his kids or something. You know, he's like, I really needed to make this shot for my team. And he talks about leadership after every game. And they can ask him a question, you know, LeBron, what are y'all going to do after the game tonight? Well, you know, I just have to be the leader for this team. I know they trust me. I mean, it's just strange. Some of his comments are strange, but I don't know how to explain. I can't even, you know, put it into words, but he just makes some strange off-the-wall comments sometimes about leadership. And then, you know, this goes, you know, even further by saying, you know, I scratched that play and I don't know, I just didn't agree with it. I thought it was foul that he didn't have to go there. He could have worded it as a professional a little bit different to protect your team, protect your coach.
Yeah, I didn't like him saying it. I didn't have a problem with him taking the last shot. Obviously, he made it, so obviously it was the right play. But to your point, Phil, I mean, we didn't need to know that. You know, and it was, and he elicited that information. And it wasn't a question. It's not like they asked him, hey, was that your play or the coach's play? You know, he volunteered that information and it wasn't even necessary, you know, and we've seen other situations like this. You know, when Peyton Manning was in Indianapolis, it was always, well, you know, Peyton's calling the plays. You know, you never heard Peyton say that. Peyton never said that. That was other people saying that. And of course, I can remember Coach Dungy setting the record straight. He was like, let's get one thing clear. Peyton doesn't call the plays. We give him plays, and he chooses one based on, you know, if he sees something at the line, he can check off to these other plays. But let's be clear, he isn't calling the plays, you know. But again, you never heard Peyton say, you know, well, I decided to run this or we ran that. That's not, you know, that wasn't his deal. Even when in that situation, you could actually honestly say, yeah, I call the plays. So I would have, yeah. So I felt like that. I felt like he was out of line. LeBron was there in terms of that. But when we look at those big shots, LeBron's shot, Derrick Rose's shot, Paul Pierce's shot, which one do you think had the biggest impact in those series? Derrick, LeBron, or Paul Pierce? Ron, I'll start with you.
Well, the biggest impact, I guess I'm glad I'm going to say LeBron shot probably had the biggest impact, I guess, because of the pressure for Cleveland.
Right.
So everybody's kind of picking them to be the favorite to come out of the East, possibly NBA champion. And you miss that shot, you're going down 3-1.
Whew.
Back to Cleveland.
Mm.
Can you imagine that? So I thought, you know, that shot, you know, was the biggest of the three. I know he's a two-time champion, but he's still building on his legacy too, so.
Right.
That could have hurt his personal legacy as well, because he played a pretty poor game up until that point, in my opinion.
Mm. What about it, Phil?
Yeah, timing is everything. You know, LeBron had made his shot in game two and Derrick Rose game three, or actually it was game four.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have said Rose, but you have to go with LeBron just because, you know, it was the later game. It kept him, just like Ron said, it kept him from going down 3-1. So that's what made it a bigger shot. Paul Pierce's shot, big time shot. Derrick Rose, a three. Had the buzzer to match J.R. Smith's three on the other end. Those are all big shots, but the importance and the pressure builds each and every game. So whatever you do the next game is always going to be more important than what happened the game before. So I have to go with LeBron on that question of the biggest buzzer beater.
On the surface, I would tend to agree with you that LeBron's shot was the biggest shot. To Ron's point, you don't make it. It's 3-1, and we all know how 3-1 series end. And on the other hand, you could almost see it when he made the shot. You know, Phil, you know, I always talk about that moment when their spirit is just broke. And you could see it on the bench. You could see it in the Chicago hopeful. You know, they already was without Pau Gasol. That hurt them. And then this was just that little something extra that truly broke their spirits. And of course, they go on to lose tonight. To further that point, that they're pretty much done. But just to mix it up a little bit, I'm going to actually say Paul Pierce. I want to say his shot was. I'm going to go with the truth, and I say that because without that shot, we don't even talk about that series at all. Those two teams would be pretty much irrelevant. That whole series is irrelevant. They put it in an irrelevant time slot. You know, the sad part about it, both of those, oh, snap. Oh, they just showed a. I didn't see that earlier. They just showed.
Oh, you missed that?
I didn't see that. Oh, man. Oh,
wow. Yeah.
Oh, so back to my point. Yeah, their spirits are broken. When you see people doing, you know, silly fouls like that, they don't want to be in the game no more. They're done. They're ready to go fishing. And, yeah, back to Paul Pierce. Yeah, without that shot, we don't even talk about that series, you know. Washington, you know, in their first round series, they couldn't even play on the big channels. They were playing on the NBA Network, so you couldn't even catch those games. So I say it was big for them, big for their city, big for their franchise, because now they're actually in the conversation. And, quite honestly, they got a shot at maybe stealing that series altogether. We're running out of time, clearly, but the one more conversation that I got to have, and I really got to get Ron's take on this. You know, when we talked about it, and Phil, I want to know where you are on this too, because you guys were on opposite ends of this thing. We talked a couple of weeks back about teams that we found that we thought would be the most likely representatives for their respective conferences from the Eastern and the Western Conference to make it to the finals. And you had picked, Phil, you had picked Golden State. Ron, you had said you wanted to go with Golden State. It's a sexy pick, but you just don't trust the jump shooting teams. And both of the jump seeding teams are both the teams with the highest field goal percentage, highest three-point percentage in the regular season. We're talking about Golden State. We're talking about Atlanta. Found themselves, you know, in an all-in-all-out dogfight up until this point, really struggling in this second series, in the second round of the playoffs. My question is, are the struggles that the jump shooting teams have, is it that their shooters have just gone cold? The Kyle Korvers, the league MVP, Steph Curry, have they just gone cold? Or is Memphis's defense, is Washington's defense such that it's causing this poor shooting? Ron, again, your expertise, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, I think it's the defense that is causing, you know, the poor shooting. I mean, when you have, you know, you're playing in a series, a seven-game series, and you're, you know, able to, you know, after each game kind of break down and see, you know, what you can do differently defensively, you know against those teams, what you're trying to take away is the three-point shot.
Right.
You know, so, you know, whether it is, you know, you're trying to pressure them, running off, you know, as we call it, run them off the line.
Mm-hmm.
Get them to get inside that lane. Get inside that three-pointer so that they're shooting twos versus threes. And, you know, so now, you know, because you are a three-point shooting team that are used to taking some of those shots, now maybe you're kind of forcing some things. Maybe now you're kind of, you know, shooting, you know, maybe more shots with hand in the face. And now it's going to kind of lower your percentage. But I thought what Golden State did last night was make a very, very good adjustment. And you know what? You know, we're gonna take what the defense gives us.
Right.
You know, we're gonna take you off. We're gonna get in the lane. And now, when you collapse and have to help because we, you know, made a few layups, now we still get what we want.
Right.
What we're looking to get, the kickouts for the threes, the transition, and things like that. So, you know, that's what always makes these series very interesting to me. Later in the rounds with the better teams, the adjustments that have to be made every game defensively.
What do you think there, Phil? I mean, I know, like I said, Golden State was your choice. Steph Curry, that's your boy. Is it Memphis' defense that's giving him fits, or is he just gone cold?
Yeah, I think in most series it's the defense. But in the Golden State series, I mean, I don't know. I mean, because in game two, you know, they lost game two and three.
Right.
In game two, they were just cold. I mean, Draymond Green, I think he is the most important player on that team. Even though Steph Curry won the MVP, I think he is the catalyst for everything that they do. But in game two, Klay Thompson couldn't make a shot. Draymond Green couldn't make a shot. They ended up losing by 10 points, but they were open. They were wide open, so I was not nervous at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Game three, they had no open shots. And, you know, I think Memphis won that game by 20. That's when I thought, man, this series is probably over once they took that 2-1 lead.
Right.
And then you come right back in that game four, and everything was rolling again for the Warriors. And that's what I'm most impressed about with Steve Kerr. I mean, I didn't know how he was going to, you know, do as a head coach, but I feel like he's done a great job as far as always challenging them. And he's able to recognize what other teams are doing and is able to make adjustments. And I don't think a lot of coaches in the NBA are able to make adjustments, you know, from one game to the next.
Right.
To be able to close out series or to be able to come from behind in a series. And I think he has that ability. And so I'm impressed by what I've seen. I'm curious to see what's going to happen in game five. But, yeah, for the first game that they lost, it was all about him being cold. But then third game, I mean, it was just the Memphis Grizzlies just getting after it and disrupting everything that the Warriors did, and, you know, they couldn't get anything going that they wanted to get, but of course it was turned around. So I'm still hopeful that the Warriors make it out, and I'm confident that they can.
Yeah, you're spot on about game two. Yeah, Golden State, I mean, they couldn't buy a basket, and it wasn't because their looks weren't there. They were getting fabulous looks and missing them. Just wide open jumpers. They were getting to their spots, getting to their favorite places on the floor, but the shots just would not go down. And the vast majority of them were uncontested. So you're right. In that situation, it seemed like they went cold. But what really disheartened me, though, about game two, even when they saw that they were cold, if you recall, they changed their lineup. They went small, and they started going inside. And Steph Curry started getting layups. And they started the pick-and-roll game a little bit, and they climbed back into the game. In fact, I think they had gotten within, let's call it, it was either within 2 or 3 points. And on the very next possession down the floor, instead of continuing the small ball and going inside and getting layups in the pick-and-roll game, instead of that, instead of Curry driving to the basket, he pulls up for a transition three to try to take the lead. It misses, and that was it. They never got close again after that. And again, they went away from their small lineup after that, too, and then they stopped, you know, they stopped doing the things that got them to that point. And I think that's because they have the jump shot mentality. You know, on a fast break, they'd rather post up for a three on a fast break, even with numbers, than to go in for the layup, you know, or to make the extra pass so someone's wide open for a high percentage shot. And I don't understand it. Doug Collins said it best in one of the games. You know, all too often, they're going for these low reward, high risk passes and plays. They're going for these high-risk shots, you know, with low reward, and it's just unnecessary. But I think that's their mentality coming back to bite them. They have that razzle-dazzle, run-and-gun mentality, and they'd rather look pretty than to look. They'd rather be pretty than to be good sometimes. So I hope to your point about Steve Kerr, I hope he can challenge him to make the extra pass and not just. You know, it's easy to stand out here and shoot the three as opposed to do the hard work to get inside, knowing that, you know, you might have to sacrifice your body. You might, you know, meet some opposition along the way. But, I definitely think that was a situation of them going cold. And, it obviously looked like all was right with the world in their game last night as they were able to come back and look like they did early in the series in game one in particular. Well, I tell you, this game that's going on right here, game five in Houston, just getting underway in the third quarter. And it's been all Houston, guys. 68-50. Houston seems to be in control. The Clippers, for whatever reason, can't seem to find their rhythm. And, you made a good point, Phil, too, about, or I think Ron, rather, about these coaches being able to make the adjustments and being able to close teams out. And I thought that Doc was going to have this team ready to go, ready to play, to close out because, you know, they were clearly on the ropes and they had an opportunity to, you know, to dispatch of them and get rid of them. But looks like they want an opportunity to do that in front of the home crowd. But this isn't over yet. We've seen these teams in this second round overcome large deficits. So we'll see how this one pans out. But that's going to do it for us. Whether or not that does it for the Clippers in this game or not, that's yet to be seen. But we will be back to talk about, by the time we meet again, hopefully the second round of the playoffs will be all but done. And then we can start talking about the conference championships. But yeah, we'll be back with you about the same time next week, same place, with my same two colleagues. That's, of course, Cool Hand Phil and Mr. Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame Ron Rutland Jr. I am your host, Big T, and you've been listening to The P.O. Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Good night.